Burning Black Cross, and of course, this is Africa Global Radio. Our story, our growth, our future. I'm still tighter than the weave that their girlfriend fixed on. You know my P, I don't think you'll ever exhaust.
She can I get why. Okay, beautiful record from Nato Chukwu, shortly called Nato C, and he is from Nigeria, from the Eastern Bloc. So he's an Igbo, that's where they say Kedu. Welcome to the space. This is the Africa Daily Show on Africa Global Radio. I am Barry, and you are welcome. If this is your first time, I say Salam Aleikum Jambo, Karibu Ekabo. This is where we explore Africa. We bring you all the goods. Of course, we have the shortcomings, but what we definitely highlight on is the progressive efforts that we're doing to make it a better space for all of us. And of course, if you're listening overseas in the diaspora, we have a community for you as well. And as I mentioned earlier, we will be engaging with a mind, a brain, you know, one who has explored various parts of the world in terms of his work, you know, his teachings, his inspiration, his works in the space of creative art, right here on the Africa Daily Show. Dr. Charles Da Costa, a PhD holder in animation. I mean, he's a multi-instrumentalist, which is what I'm very passionate about, in finding out what that means in the space of, you know, being a creative, being an animator. He's also passionate about stop motion. Of course, there's a question there I'd like to know. Charles' scholarly work focuses on the nexus, the link between theory and practice in animation. I mean, he's taught in several universities in the UK. Of course, that cannot be overlooked. I mean, at the University of Westminster, Media and University for Creative Arts, Farnham, Cultural Studies at the Kingston University and Animation Studies at Morley College, South London. He also taught film and post-colonial studies at the London Centre of Stanford University of Birmingham. Wow. Previously served at the University of Reading as its new media manager and was a project manager for the European Commission's media initiative prior to that position. I mean, he has impacted knowledge, you know, in his field of being an animator. And not just that, I believe he has other, you know, responsibilities to not just his immediate environment or his immediate people, but also people on the continent of Africa as well. Dr. Charles Da Costa has worked as a cameraman and a photographer for a UNESCO expedition in the South Pole and on several educational animation projects in Europe, Africa, in South America. He's currently developing a series of history-centered animated shorts. Brilliant. And we have the privilege of having him right here in the studios. I mean, he's sat in bigger, you know, media spaces and talked about what he has to offer the world. And he's here with us as well. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's good to have you. I watch one of your YouTube videos, and there's a certain nickname that your friends used to call you. Have I qualified? Am I in any position?
Well, it's Stache.
Stache, yeah.
Stache is the
sounds
name.
French.
It is. It's I don't know how many of you have read Tintin or you read.
We're familiar with it.
Stache.
Now, the guy who wrote Tintin was called
Hergé. Now it rings a bell. Okay.
Hergé. Hergé is essentially RG, pronounced like French. Hergé.
Hergé. Right? Okay.
And his name was Georges Remy.
Right.
Georges Remy. Okay. So literally GR. But he signed his name with RG, Hergé, and then turned the, what do you call the initials, into a new name, Hergé.
Right.
So it was kind of played. You can tell that somebody's work like that would have impacted me, because he didn't just draw. He was a great researcher, a great mind. Georges Remy never left Belgium, but yet he wrote stories that resonated with people around the world.
Right.
He spent most of his time in libraries and museums and stuff like that. Brilliant illustrator and all. So I learned that when I was a kid, but then I was also drawing and drawing in sequence. And one of the things I started doing was signing my drawings. I was looking for a way to sign it without having to write Charles Da Costa on it. So by and by, I came back with Stache.
Okay.
You borrowed from Hergé's idea, but it was more Da Costa's Charles Henry. So the STA from there and the rest, and put it together and...
You get the sachet.
Yeah, sachet, yeah. And then it became like... So that was at the age of 14, and the name has stuck.
At this,
and
at,
so
at
that's
the
when...
Age 14.
14, so my friends have always called me that. And
right.
Essentially, that's who I am. I'm sachet.
Wow. Where did this start? 14, where were you? Were you in Ghana?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know every pothole in this country.
Really? Wow.
I know every pothole in this country.
And that was when you fell in love with what? What? Drawing?
I started drawing probably when I was about 5 years old.
Hmm.
And what would happen was most kids would draw, like try to draw like a little stick house or something.
Uh-huh.
You know, the little cars with... It always looked like a block with like a chair.
Yes, yes.
People drew those things, but I drew stories. For me, it wasn't just drawing that. I would draw and I'll say, and then this car went that way and it did this and it crashed and whatever, and I'll draw it. And it was, that's sequential art.
Okay.
See, that's sequential art. Mm. And sequential art provides the basis for a lot of the kind of comic book strips and stuff like that.
Mm.
Sequential art also provides the framework for storyboarding, which is important for all forms of storytelling.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't do animation without storyboarding.
Mm.
You have a script,
mm-hmm.
then you break the script down into, you know, you go from your story into breaking it down into sequences and stuff like that. And
yeah.
you break it down into whatever sequences they're going to be. And then you need to make a, what do you call it, a shot list or
right.
whatever you want to make.
Mm.
Now, one of the things is after you've done those kinds of breakdowns, at some point, you have to communicate the idea to somebody or how you'd like it to be seen.
To be seen, right.
So then you need to be able to draw the story. Mm. So you board, you literally board, make a board that sees, you know, outlines for your stories.
Mm.
So that's storyboarding.
Right.
That's storyboarding. Helps you to then be able to go back and do the timing of how long each shot is going to last in the screen.
Right.
So it's a series of those kinds of steps. And I think lots of people tend to assume that you can, some software is going to solve the problem.
Right.
But before it does, you have to think.
Right.
And it won't solve the problem anyway. It will only help you. It often helps you if you know what to do with it. So, of course, back then we weren't using loads of software to do things, but back then Disney had already been successful at least since 1937.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all about drawing stories, and that's where it began as a kid. Yeah, and it was totally misunderstood.
Yeah, I want to believe so.
Well, we carried on doing it, you know.
But what gave you that you know, zeal, that courage to continue to eventually, you know, I think I want to be an animator? Because, I mean, Yasmin mentioned 30 years ago, you say you want to start drawing stuff. I don't think it would be a pleasant conversation with your
parents. 30 years ago, I was doing my master's in animation.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
30 years ago.
I was doing my master's in animation, and I was still very much, of course, me.
Hmm.
So what happened, gosh, that's a long story. I didn't think I have to say it, but
I'll have to say it first. Yeah.
So I went to school I was in this boarding school in Achimota Primary School.
Okay.
It used to be called Achimota School Primary Department.
Mm.
And the reason was because it was Achimota School.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had a primary department. So you automatically segued into the secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
Much later, it will become known as Achimota Primary School because it will split up.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a kid, I would draw, and there were quite a few teachers who were encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other teachers who tried to literally knock it out of my head.
Mm.
Like, Dacosta, stop drawing. You're always drawing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get knocks and stuff like that. But there was one particular teacher, and her name was... Her name is, because she's still around.
Alive,
she's 93 years old. I saw her last week. And she's called Mrs. Victoria Hansenotti.
Hmm.
And she noticed that I was always drawing. And so what she would do is she'd just bring me loads of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I discovered that she had loads of, like, scrap paper, like she just brought it to me so I could keep drawing. So I was drawing, and of course I started to somehow understand. Must have started from a mistake, because one time I drew something and I tried to scratch it off and I did something else. But when I came to move it, you know, like I was hurrying up, I noticed
you
that
saw
it looked
something,
like it was
yeah.
moving. I noticed that. Much later, I learned that that phenomenon is called persistence of vision. And that's really how it governs what how we see images for the screen, how we manipulate them. But I discovered it. And so once I discovered it at that point, I started, I would always just make little flip books. I didn't know they were called flip books. I was just doing it. Fast forward many years later, I would be a science student in secondary school. And but I always drew.
Right.
And I always saw, if you look at how molecular structure works or anything like that, it's pure visualization. And the molecules move like this and they do that. And if you chart them out. So I could literally see them dancing. And I remember I had a teacher once and in Fansfield school who said to me, "Stop, why are you always drawing? Why are you always drawing?" And I said to him, "Remember Kekule in chemistry?" He was a chemistry master. I said, "Yeah, Kekule." I said, "We know how Kekule discovered molecular structures." I said, "Are you the one to tell me?" I said, "He had a dream.
Aye.
He woke up that afternoon and he drew the dream." That's animation.
It is.
I wasn't using the term animation then, but yeah, so that's what I'm drawing. He said, "You think you're Kekule." He totally misunderstood. But for me, I was a visual learner. You get what I'm saying? So it's come a long way. At every juncture, there's misunderstanding, and then you just had to kind of try to forge ahead.
So I'm just curious, and looking at him is a total, I don't know, it's so beautiful because you can see him using mannerism and ICO and all of that. And it comes from what you do, so you could really appreciate that. I'm wondering what you read in high school and what you read for your first degree before you went into the animation though.
High school, what I did was I was a science student. So the math, the physics, the everything, I did it. I loved it. I was a science student. But I also did, we had something then called, wasn't so much cultural subjects. I look at it now and it was interesting why they had that cultural subject. But one of them was, we did woodwork or metalwork. And then there was also art. All right. And music.
Right.
I couldn't decide which one to do. You had to choose one. And what I did is I did woodwork. But after a while, I hopped to the arts, you know. And then after a while, I hopped to music. And then I did the music. And then I came back again and hopped back. You know, I was constantly sort of
switching.
But you were supposed to do one and stick with it. But I just kept moving across because I could kind of see the way I was interested in all of it. So it was a bit of a challenge, but I was always hopping between. What I did find, though, is that for some reason, I could tell a story well.
Okay.
Like if there was something that needed to be done.
You can tell it well.
Tell it, you know, like, and put it across. So I was essentially a science student. But at back in our day, we had the O-levels. And at O-level, I took the sciences and I took art as well as history. So most people were doing seven subjects. I did nine.
Right. That was a challenge for you.
Yeah.
You wanted to do it, so obviously.
Yeah. So I did nine.
And this was at the University of Ghana.
No, I'm talking, that's O-level.
O-level, okay. Yeah.
So after that, I went to sixth form. But in sixth form, and you know, it used to be like 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the 2 years I did in two different high schools.
Right.
I did lower six in Aquinas, upper six in Prisek.
Okay.
And people normally did one school. Because again, it was one of those strange things. But in A level, I did the arts completely.
Right.
I didn't do the sciences. And then I was meant to go to the University of Science and Technology, as it was called, before they brother Kwame Nkrumah back. Before it was Kwame Nkrumah years and years and years ago. And then it became, they removed it, mm-hmm. and then later it came back. So I was supposed to go there to do architecture.
Okay.
Back in those days, there were only three universities in Ghana. And I think I asked some really cheeky questions because they interview you. Mm-hmm. And normally they ask, you're supposed to, afterwards, they say, what are your thoughts? You know? Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a cheeky question I asked. That I said, well, in this country, a lot of our architectural projects, major mm-hmm. architectural projects, right. are funded by donor organizations. Mm-hmm. So they said, yeah, that's true. So my question was, and those people seem to come with their architects mm-hmm. and their designers. Mm-hmm. They said, that's true. I said, so when are ours going to be doing big projects? Mm-hmm. There was a kind of an awkward silence.
Silence, yeah.
And I said, oh, that's a very good question. And that was the end of it. And so by the time I realized everyone had gone to do architecture, mm-hmm. there was nothing for me. I wasn't part of it. And then, so I tried to get to the art college there. And I think they were pretty upset that they were being chosen as second class. So they didn't pick me in. And that's what I wanted to do. So I was like, okay, I had a year to kill.
Right.
And so during that year, fortunately for me, I decided to do my national service. Mm. And fortunately for me, I say fortunately because due to happenstance, mm-hmm. I would end up working in the American Embassy's school, Lincoln School.
Yeah. And Lincoln. Okay.
I believe you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I end up working there as a teacher aide.
Oh.
I'm not saying that because going to an American place was the best, mm-hmm. but what I'm saying that fortunately for me is when I got there,
right.
people there, I saw kids there who struggle with things like math. There are issues with math and stuff like that. Mm. And what I'll do is I'll just say to them as a teacher aide, okay, just draw what you see.
Right.
So the kids who start drawing, and they found they were solving problems faster.
Right.
Nobody was doing that. I think it was one of the weird things that I just... But then my mom was an educator, so I'd read in one of my mom's many books. We had lots of books on the shelf, and I was eclectic. So I read somewhere about visual learners and all that. Whatever. I just read it. It was one of those big education books. Mm-hmm. And it struck me in that particular point, oh, you know what? Let them draw their problem. Because I started doing mine. So they could see things coming. And so it was a very interesting approach. And so they asked me to stay on to work there. I said, nope, I'm not staying. And I was broke as ever. And I was like, and it was good money, but I was saying, nah. And you know, you had air conditioned classrooms. Yeah. And the afternoon after school, a CD van would drop you in your house.
Yeah. And in good working condition, generally.
I said, nah, I don't like it. And they must have thought I was insane.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because while I was there, they had loads of books. They had things that other schools didn't have. Mm. Then I began to notice there was something called animation.
Mm. Okay.
You know, and, you know, because they talked about all the professions and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'd never had any career guidance or whatever. So I started to see, so somebody does this or whatever. When you see a little cartoon film, there's all the stuff behind it. So I was learning stuff that was that's why I said, fortunately for me, they had material that proved that I wasn't crazy.
Mm.
And then I started to ask questions, do research, and I found out, surprisingly, there was an institution here in Ghana called NAFTI, the National Film and Television Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a program, an animation and graphics program.
Okay.
I said, wow. Why is nobody doing this?
So that's as far as which year?
1986 is when I went to NAFTI.
Right.
But I actually did my national service in 1985. I started my national service on Thursday, October 11th, 1985. I was going to remember things. It was one of those things. Yeah. So I went to NAFTI and I already had a portfolio. I'd kept drawings and everything. So I had sketchbooks, loads. So I go there and they say, okay, you're the right person. So I filled my forms properly. I'd got references. Say, but who's going to pay your fees? Because over here, we're fee paying. And unless you're sponsored, you can't come in. So I was like, how am I going to do that? So I started going around talking to uncles, you know, because
family members, basically.
And everyone, you want to go and do cartoons, right?
Yeah, that's the part I'm looking forward to. Like, how are you able to convince?
What is this animation? I said, animation. What's animation? And then I'll explain. So what job are you going to get? So where are you going with this?
Yeah.
And you talk about cartoons. Isn't that for children? Oh, and I'm thinking for myself. But I remember asking one uncle a question. And if that guy could have walloped me across the face, he would have.
He said,
yeah, it's true, it's for children. But don't adults make children's toys?
Genuine question to ask.
Don't adults make...
Yeah.
And I said, here we have a company called... You know, it's a company that made Ikuaba dolls. Back in the days. I said, they're trying to make African toys for children.
Yeah.
It's not children making the toys.
These are adults.
You think you know everything, don't you? But his look and the, you know, the, I just left. So we had all those challenges. And then it occurred to me, I was painting and I was drawing and I was doing that.
At that
time. I also started to experiment with photography. So I started to think and I had an epiphany. And that epiphany was one day I saw a newspaper. I was looking at it and there was a huge obituary notice. And I saw this man, Ebusapin, this and they got the children.
The list of
people,
family got, members and
this
all.
This one's USA, this one's here. That's a market. So I tracked that family down and told them, people, you got all these relatives, but they can't all come to the funeral. I said, some don't have visas, some don't have. Are you the one to tell us what to do? So I was like, I said, no, that's not the point. What I'm trying to say is I can make photographs, take photographs of your funeral for you, make it into an album, and then you can send this album to them so they can pay for the funeral. Okay, young man, come back. We'll talk.
Let's talk.
So we got back again. They discussed it and thought, okay. I did the job for them, presenting them. This brilliant man. They took it. They said, come back for your money tomorrow. Nothing. I mean, basically, I did loads of jobs like that. God never paid for it. And I was bleeding money until one day somebody died. And the family just happened to have somebody who had come from America who wanted to take the photos back. And they said, do it. And then they paid me. That was how I started to pay for my studies in NAFTA. So as a student, they used to call me, we're calling the term that's PJ, private job.
Okay.
I wasn't supposed to do that.
But you just needed to...
As soon as Thursday came, I was excited because Friday somebody was dead.
And a Saturday was going to be funeral.
No, Friday was going to be wicked. I used to go right to the morgue. Go to the morgue and take... Don't do that. Hey, you don't respect the dead.
Yeah.
I said,
I'm working.
You know, I was like, hold on.
I'm working.
And by this time, I'd also learned documentary photography and all that. So I was applying everything. And that's essentially how I paid my fees as a student.
Wow.
Right here. So I was here in this country.
Yeah. This
Dr. Charles Da Costa. I mean, an animator, history professor as well. I mean, blessing us with brief, I'm sure there are more to that, but brief of how the journey began, you know, and how he persevered, you know. It's kind of like he was determined, you know. I mean, to be able to tell your uncle that, you know, and go all the way to the university folks and sit in front of them and ask them that question, it's like, yo, what is he out for? But eventually, it's a fruitful journey. I mean, if you could look back and talk about how 30 years ago, that was when he actually, you know, doing your master's, you know, that's 30 years ago. Some of us were still toddlers, you know, still trying to find our way. But there's this part that I'm very interested about. You're passionate about stop motion. What is that?
Okay. So stop motion. Any of you seen any of like stuff like Wallace and Gromit? Or you've seen Any of you know seen any of Tim Burton's work?
What's his work?
Okay. What about Laika?
So I'm bad with names of those who create, maybe the products.
So The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
All right. I'm not sure. Just a little. What about Wallace and Gromit?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think
you've
seen
it.
You've seen that?
Okay. Nightmare Before Christmas. Shaun the Sheep.
Nope.
And again, when you see all these things, when you know, this demonstrates to me that there's a sense of unawareness of what we can really achieve. I'm mentioning stop motion productions. So if you do a search for Shaun, S-H-A-U-N, the sheep, yeah, and stuff like that, or Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E, and Gromit, G-R-O-M-I-T, you would see all these kinds of characters. Or you go, Chicken Run. Who's seen Chicken Run?
I've seen Chicken Run.
Okay, Chicken Run is stop motion.
Okay.
So basically what happens is that you've got these claymation or clay animations.
There's this one, Pingo.
Pingo.
Pingo, yeah.
Yeah, with all the sounds. Pingo, yeah. It's one of my favorite.
I watched that back in Nigeria. It used not to speak, but the voices,
I know Pingo well.
Long time ago.
So that's stop motion.
That the technique used for that is stop motion.
Okay.
Now, I keep saying I'm passionate about stop motion because, yes, I am. But at the end of the day, all of cinema, all of filmmaking, all of image generation is stop motion.
Okay.
Because it is not so much what plays as what happens between the frames. So you have this frame. You stop that frame, right? You manipulate your object a little bit. Then you capture the next frame. Then you manipulate the object a bit. Then you capture the frame. Then you manipulate a bit. Then you do it. You're literally stopping the motion. And then what happens is in projection, you move the film. You know, your film speed. Not film speed so much, sorry. The number of frames per second, or I move with that, so FPS, frames per second, you project the image at a certain number of frames per second, and you generate the illusion of movement.
Okay.
If you got an image like that, and then you have something like that, and then something like that, each frame, and then you run it quickly, it looks like it's done. So I believe that film making image generation for the screen is all essentially it's stop motion. Because somebody has to study some motion and interrogate how that motion occurs and then reproduce it. So in effect, animation is not about making movement, but it's about movements that are reproduced. If I want this mic, and let's assume that, okay, you're Sandra, all right? So we want to call this mic Sandra. I want the mic to behave like Sandra. We're going to spend all our time looking at Sandra's mannerisms and how she turns her head and little things like that. All these kinds of things. And then we use the principles of an animation. We apply that to the principles of animation. We illustrate what she's doing, reproduce it all the time using this microphone. And what then happens, in the end, this microphone is going to sit there like that. All this movement, all the movement, and transpose into that. So we see that. We then project a voice over a particular period of its head turn, of its seeming movement. And people say, look at that mic. Look at it. That's Sandra. That's Sandra the mic. So, but to achieve that, we would have had to look at movements and then reproduce the movement. Because the movement's already there.
So
animation is essentially about movements that are reproduced.
Right.
But in order to reproduce, you've got to study them, observe them.
Okay. All right.
But all that process is conceptually stop motion.
Okay.
Mm. All right. No matter what you do with all the, you know, complex digital tools mm-hmm. and everything, mm-hmm. essentially you're stopping movement right. to analyze it, to reproduce it.
Mm. Right. Interesting. PB.
So what house were you in Infantsman?
I was in Balmaqua.
Yeah, because he's
I was in Freeman Agri.
That was my first house. I was in Freeman Agri, Appadom.
Appadom.
And then from in the second year, I moved to Balmaqua and stayed.
Ah, right.
Yeah,
I love the bridges.
Right, yeah, I can see.
You had to make it about the fantasy.
From the middle to the to the four.
You had to make it about the right. fantasy.
No, just
you
a little.
You went to as well, so yeah, we're here. Tom,
right.
Big up to you too. Right. And you won't come.
So, how are you giving back to your country, Ghana?
Well, that's a very difficult question because since I left here, I've tried to give back.
Right.
And this is the difficult
Which year did you leave?
I left Ghana 33 years ago. Yeah.
To the UK?
Yeah, first, and then moved to the United States, and now I'm in Australia.
33 years ago?
Yes. That's a whole journey.
It is, actually.
But I've come back almost every year.
Mm.
Right? And after, when people ask, what have you given back to the country? The question is, I like to reverse it. What has the country given to me? The only thing the country has really given to me is the ability to challenge and argue. That's really what it is. I mean, there were no wars.
Mm-hmm.
So there was relative peace.
Right.
And it takes a village to bring up a person.
True that.
So in a sense, I've had a village help bring me up.
Mm.
But in that village, they thought I was crazy. They didn't understand the potential for creative art.
Mm.
And I had to argue.
To make a point, to make a statement.
So what the government, I said the government, not the government, what the country gave me was the relative peace to argue mm. and not get killed.
Right.
Which is something.
It is.
Exactly. But then I haven't left here.
Mm.
I've tried several times to set up projects here. You know, so many times. And nearly every time it's been blocked or nixed or equipment has been stolen, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So it's been a tough one, but I've still kept, I mean, I'm giving back because I'm telling a story so that hopefully somebody will say, who's that arrogant guy who's wherever, and start asking questions.
Right.
So right after graduation, NAFTI, you realize it wasn't a serene working, it wasn't a space that was welcoming for you. Yes?
Yeah. I mean, look, the story of how I went to England itself is fascinating. Because I used to go around taking shots, you know, of billboards and stuff like that. And one day, and this is a story, you know, again, happenstance and serendipity are things that you can't discount.
Right.
I was taking a photograph near Awudome Cemetery.
Here in Accra.
Yeah, coincidentally, I was somewhere in that place today. I had to see somebody in North.
Mm.
I came straight here from North Industrial Area to have a meeting there. But I was by the cemetery taking shots of billboards where we were around all the big hoardings and stuff like that. And then this gentleman pulled up in a Pajero. And the guy said, excuse me. I said, yeah, it was a Lebanese gentleman. I've been taught to respect people. So at the moment, I'm saying, how are you doing? And he was surprised that I said, how are you doing? He says, what are you doing, young man? I said, taking photographs of billboards. He said, why? That's very fascinating. So I said, yeah. I said, it takes a lot of effort to make a billboard. He said, the way you position your typography, the way you decide what things are going to look like here, where you place things in this. He said, that's interesting. I said, yeah. So he said, so why are you doing that? And I said, because there isn't any, like, repository of images that you can visit. I said, there's nothing.
Mm.
So I'm doing that so that one day, if I have to do something, I'll have a reference.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all. So he looked at me and said, that's very smart. He gave me his card and he was the managing director of Mitsubishi.
Okay.
And that billboard right there was a Mitsubishi billboard.
Oh, fortunately for you.
So it was happenstance.
Right.
And it was by a cemetery.
Right. A scary place where most wouldn't want to go by.
I've walked through many times at night, but that's another story. Yeah. Just walking through, not scared.
Right.
And that's another one for another day.
Interesting.
So that itself was happenstance. And through our interactions and stuff like that, you know, after a period, they asked me, so I did stuff for them. They asked me one day that, what do you want to do in your life? And I said, oh, you really want to know? I want to go to the world's top art college. This is the name of the college. This is what they do. These are the people who've been there. And they said, oh, okay, we'll check it out. They checked it out. It was. And then we got talking, and eventually I wound up there.
Wow. Wow.
So again, serendipity, whatever.
Came to play. After all these years abroad, I mean, you've seen it all, you've experienced how appreciating the animation world is out there as compared to, you know, here, this part of the world, Africa. Of course, you'd want to think that over years, evolution has taken place, technology has changed over time, and maybe we might have appreciated, you know, to a certain degree. What would be your assessment?
My assessment is quite direct. We need a revolution of the mind. We need a mindset revolution.
Right.
We need to first of all be able to understand, first and foremost, that we need to do things properly. If we don't know something, it doesn't mean that we can't learn. But at the same time, we must have the humility to want to learn things and do things properly. Look, there are certain things, and people have often said to me that, oh, how did you get into that white man stuff or why? You know, animation, that's for white people. I said to them, no, is medicine for white people? No. The thing is, some people dedicate more time to finding out about their craft, asking questions, and then doing it properly and developing it into an industry. Whereas we don't. We're just not doing it. And when we have, you know, it's, you know, a little knowledge is a very dangerous thing. So you get people learn how to use some particular software, little bits of it, and they think, oh, I'm an animator, I can do something. It's not true. You see what I'm saying? And also, a lot of people don't really understand it or don't make the effort to. So what then happens is, if somebody explains just a little bit, oh, I use this software, well, then in that case, oh, you're an animator, oh, you're not, you know, oh, what are you talking about, you know? What you're talking about is too expensive and it's too white. But we're not doing it. So essentially, we need to
retune our mind.
We just need to do a mindset revolution.
Right. But isn't it expensive to get into that industry?
But it is not.
It's not.
Because it's about, you know, it's not expensive getting into that industry.
Financially?
No, it is not.
Right.
Look, as an example, last year I produced an animated short that was shown in a lot of festivals in the United States. It was just a little pilot for a series I was going to make.
Okay.
It cost me nothing. It cost me nothing. All right? And that's because I know what to do. But if people will learn to listen to what to do, they can actually produce the work.
Right.
The initial investment is in learning and understanding what you need to do. If you can't do it, talk to people who can. Understand the problem well enough so that you can research solutions.
Right. To it.
We don't often research enough. We just want to leapfrog everything. It doesn't happen that way.
Right. Well, my colleague asked you finally that what you've given back to Ghana, and of course the question is, what has Ghana given back to you? But you're developing a series of history-centered animated short. Is it based on our history, Africans, or it's
based
global?
On the history. When I say history-centered animation, I'm interested in people's stories.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So I'm not
a race kind of thing.
No. It's not about, first of all, the idea of race is flawed. You have the rat race. You have the rat race.
Yeah.
You have the dog race.
Right.
You have the human race.
Absolutely.
All right. the human race, and then within the human race, you have a black race. Check it out.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's flawed.
It is.
So it's one of those flawed concepts that people become lazy and just keep using. And if you want to talk about the differences in different people, you want to talk about more like genotype.
Okay.
Culture.
It's a better way. Not even culture. Because you can have people of the same genotype who have different culture, you know, operate in different cultural spaces.
Yeah.
But genotype, literally genetic type or whatever, works better than race. And it's more, race is a lazy word to use. So when you talk about the history-centered stories, I'm interested in your history. I'm interested in your history. I'm looking at things like maybe, let's say, for instance, you went to a school where there were all girls like you or guys like you. But you found that surprisingly, you know, if, let's say, you got in there and simply because of your accent being slightly different, you know, people are like, you know, this guy is so strange.
Yeah.
You know, he talks like this. He wants to be like that.
Yeah.
And how you would have dealt with that situation growing up. Or like as an example, one of my students, when, you know, he came to Australia, he'd been, because he's coming from Nigeria, he was automatically, everything that he put into the system came up with fraud.
Oh boy.
So the fact that this guy had been accepted to do his PhD, but wanted to, was looking for accommodation was a problem. They didn't believe that a Nigerian guy is coming to do a PhD. They didn't believe that this guy needs accommodation. And so he went through, you know, it was a hell of a, a nightmare. But eventually he did find somebody. And when he found the person, they arranged through the government, wherever, to pay the accommodation, everything in, you know, in advance. So he goes through all this and he comes there, you know, arrives in Australia. And then the gentleman had offered to come and meet him to help him.
Right.
So the moment he saw him as a Yoruba guy,
right,
who had gone through so much hassle, the first thing is he saw this white guy with a sign for him. He knew, this is the man.
The guy,
and he immediately prostrated on the floor.
That's my culture. That's how we greet.
Right. So he immediately went to Ghana, and this white guy was like, oh, no, 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 no. And this guy is holding his foot and thanking him. And so in the airport, you can see what is like cultural dissonance. This is somebody expressing gratitude.
Yeah.
This is other people seeing a black guy disgracing black people by falling in front of a white guy.
Yeah.
This is a white guy embarrassed because they're going to think he's an abuser or a child. whatever.
So different can, perspectives. From
so
different...
you can see cultural dissonance. Now, as an animator, that is funny. Because I see the humor coming across.
Yeah.
And as the guy is telling his story, he's laughing because a year or two later, he can see how he was making a fool of himself. And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So those are the kind of the history things I'm interested in.
Right.
Stories like that, they are animatable.
Right.
And when you do them, it makes everyone laugh.
Yeah.
But it actually makes people reflect. And they're taught better through. You see what I'm saying?
I get that.
Where can we find you? Like a website, social media?
Okay. So a website, I've taken my website down simply because I wanted a blackout to think for a while. Because social media has got us, I'm not on Facebook. You can find me. However, if you put my name in and you go Charles Da Costa, things will come up.
Yeah.
You know,
then we can reach you via an email or something.
Yeah, email. I mean, you've got it in your system here somewhere. Yasmin has it.
I'm talking about someone who is listening and may want to, you know,
they should contact your radio station.
Okay. That's a good, that's a starting point.
They should contact your radio station and then your radio station would
reach out to you.
We'll reach out. Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Charles Da Costa. I mean, you came this year to, of course, say goodbye to your mother. I'd say we sympathize with you. Condolences from the Africa Daily team. And I believe your comings have always been productive because I believe you'd want to see a change in the animation industry. Correct?
I guess so.
All right. And we want to say thank you very much once again for coming through. But final words to anyone, because what one is thinking is that it's a difficult space. It requires money. What do I need to get into animation? It's an industry that maybe it's meant for the Western people, not for us here. And for someone to do an incredible work in that space, you need to travel abroad to learn it and get back and start doing it, what would you tell them?
First thing is, where there's a will, there's a way.
Mm.
And the interesting thing for animation is there are many ways.
Right.
What is really useful right now is to find out, is start off by learning the basis or the fundamentals of animation.
Right.
All right. Start learning things like the 12 principles of animation.
Okay.
There's so many videos and so much material via YouTube and the internet on just how to begin to animate.
Okay.
Learn simple things like arcs. Why do we have arcs? If I turn my head this way, it's moving in an arc. If I do that, it's an arc. If I wave my hand, it's an arc.
Mm.
So learn about things like that, principles like arcing. Like what I'm doing is arcing. Almost every human movement, every motion that's naturalistic is arcing. If you start going like that, that's not naturalistic.
Mm.
So learn some of these things. The materials are there. And have the patience to learn the fundamentals.
Right.
But then when you learn, as you learn the fundamentals, start watching movies with a critical eye. Ask questions.
Okay.
Because that's where you want to end up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're going to major in games, they're screen-based.
Right.
Understand screen-based. Mm. Learn the basics of photography and cinematography.
Mm.
Learn the five C's of cinematography and stuff like that. Yeah. Find out about it. I give you an exercise, listeners.
All right.
Five C's of cinematography.
Okay.
And so learn about filmmaking and storytelling.
Mm.
Learn things like the story spine. You know, like the spine you have in your body? Learn, find out about the story spine. So that you can learn how to tell stories from beginning, middle, end, and let it capture an audience's attention.
Right.
These are all things that are useful, but you can do it. You can do it.
Dr. Charles Da Costa, PhD in animation, he has graced our studios today and we are very excited. We wish we had more time to get into other matters. And we definitely need to get him on a podcast. We get to ask, why didn't you come lecture in one of our universities?
Yeah.
The numerous universities we've seen, UK, US, all of that. And I won't pass out by my knowledge, Niviana.
Well, it's very easy. The reason is that, look, there are no animation programs and people still misunderstand it. No university in this country has invested in animation.
Oh boy.
Well, actually, University of Science and Technology is just about to doodle with it.
Mm.
But they're doodling with the subject.
Right.
You understand? NAFTI has always run an animation program.
Mm.
That can be more extensive.
Okay. Okay.
Because it's been running since 1978.
Well.
So it could be further.
Okay.
But still, again, I come back to the mindset revolution.
Mm.
People are content with enough. They just take a little bit and they're fine.
Mm.
But if you don't drink deep in knowledge, you don't expand.
True.
Mm. So,
a word to a wise is enough, and that's from Dr. Charles Da Costa. He said it all. You get to watch the video on YouTube later on, and of course, listen to the YouTube. Thank you very much, Doctor, once again.
Thanks.
We're looking forward to having more conversation again in the future.
Thanks.
This is the Africa Lady Show, and this is where we bring it to a close, because Creative's Corner with PB is on standby to kick off. Ntetiapa Obrafo says you need to be a good citizen. Retune the mind. So we electricity, I ain't go rebium. Please change that mentality. As Doctor said, retune the mindset. We'll be back in a bit.
I listen to Africa Global Radio. Make una tune in, now that the better tunes they come out from.
Bravo, bravo. The last two. You want basa basa, yeah? Look at you, bro.
Execution Entertainment.
This is an Africa Global Radio production.